This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's December 4th, 2009, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long, and I got to say I'm really happy today, Chris. I cannot believe that we're broadcasting from the White House.
We snuck right in,
we,
man.
We got right past security. It's like a free-for-all here now.
You know, they saw the matching shirts. They figured we had to be something official. They
we
let us
like
right
haters.
Through.
Yep, absolutely. And we sneaked our good friend Dr. Frank Toscano in with us, who will be doing our Ask Chris and Scott show later on.
So. I am dreading the show today. I don't know
Are
why.
You?
I'm filled with dread.
Filled with dread.
Yeah, a little nervous. Don't know what he's going to throw at us.
That's what makes it so exciting. Living on the edge. On the high wire.
All right.
Well, here's the thing. We've got a great hand of the week with Lee Childs later on. And, of course, you know, when Lee's on the show, he has such good analysis that it takes a while. And we know Frank's got a lot of good questions, too. So we're going to make this a very special episode of Blossom today. And kind of get right into the Ask Chris and Scott. And don't worry about it. Your hotline, your mailbag, your one-minute mystery, the news desk, all that good stuff. It will be coming back next week, tanned and rested, relaxed, and better than ever.
But there are a couple of things that we have to talk about just because it's so important. They're so big during the week that we've got to mention them before we move on to the dreaded Ask Chris and Scott special.
I'm not dreading it. I'm excited about it.
All right.
All right, well, first of all, we got to mention that on Black Friday, when freaks all over the nation were out at 3 in the morning camping out to get a TV for 10 bucks off, the U.S. Treasury and the Federal Reserve decided, hey, the Unlawful Internet Gaming Enforcement Act, Gambling Enforcement Act, whatever it is, that dreaded piece of legislation, they were delaying enactment of it for 6 months.
That's a huge victory for us, because in other words, they're saying... Yeah, we really just can't do this yet. You know, there's just no way to really do it and regulate it properly, and it's a foolish bill. So we're gonna keep delaying it, hopefully until something more positive and better for us comes out of it. So it's a huge win for us.
Yeah, absolutely, and because it would have gone in effect a couple days ago, and then today, of course, we're taping the show a day earlier than we posted. But Barney Frank has his hearings up on the Hill.
Yes.
So hopefully this delay will be long enough that we can get real legislation. And if not, maybe we'll find a way just to keep extending it.
Well,
how Washington works.
Take one bean and put it in the victory column. But now, at the same time, take another bean and put it in the loss column.
Yeah, and you know, if you hear my stomach grumbling, which I'm sure you will, it's because I'm on a hunger strike.
You're never going to eat again.
I'm protesting this next piece of news. Binion's Gambling Hall. Binion's, the classic Binion's downtown.
Yes.
December 14th, will be closing their hotel, which is fine, because I stayed there once, and it's a piece of crap, right?
Right.
But they're closing the coffee shop as well, too. The coffee shop, Chris.
Man, unbelievable. And that's like the greatest place to grab a meal. To chill, to hang out. That's where you got most of your meals, other than the Ellis Island Steak.
Where else am I going to get prime rib at 7 in the morning? No, it really is. The coffee shop there is a blast. It's down in the basement. It's kind of really nice. Yep. And
Benny's Bullpen is right there, right? That's the...
Well, yeah,
the
it's a little snack bar
little
thing.
Snack
yep.
bar and
yep.
everything. And
but, you know, they're keeping the poker room and the casino open, and they're hoping to open all this other stuff back up when the climate gets better, so...
Oh, so they're not going to, like, tear it down and make room for something else. They're shutting down operations, hoping to open it again some other day.
See, this is the good news, bad news of economics. We're all excited a couple weeks ago. Hey, everybody says Vegas is going to be depressed for the next year or two, so great deals!
Yeah.
And the problem is it's so depressed that some of the best deals are going away.
God, going to miss that place, man. I enjoyed myself there. I had dinner with Big Dave and his wife. And had a good time with them, and I got my picture taken with that million dollars and everything. Well, that'll still be around, right? Because that's near the casino.
Maybe they'll close that.
Oh, they close that. Oh,
you just can't afford to maintain the $1 million display.
They need that cash. They got to put it back in the bank.
All right, we're going to bring Dr. Frank on here real quick, but we just want to remind folks of a lot of Ante Up events coming up pretty soon. Of course, starting Wednesday night, Apes.
Yeah, you know, I was so excited when we were going to play Badoogie, and then I actually played in the free roll. Now I'm not looking forward to it so much. It's such a frustrating game. It is so worse than Rats. It's not even
so
funny.
Worse than Rats.
But it's Wednesday night, 9 o'clock Eastern time on PokerStars. You know the drill, and so is everybody in, well, I was going to say anybody in Brazil, but actually they're, you know, everywhere now. Everybody's just, you know, go to anteupmagazine.com/apes and you'll find it. But also, Scott, I'm getting practicing wearing pants lately.
Yes.
Because, you know,
good.
I always wear shorts.
That's good. That's
but,
good.
But I've been throwing pants on a lot lately, even though I don't have them on today because it's kind of warm in the studio. But, you know, I knew there was going to be three of us in here. There's less oxygen and more heat. But, I've been wearing pants because we're going to Chicago, and it's going to be freaking cold.
That's right. Well, it's the Windy City for a reason.
Yeah, I know. Right off the Lake Michigan.
But once again, we invite everybody to come out and watch us make TV fools of ourselves December 18th, 19th, the Irish American Heritage Center in Chicago. It's the Ante Up Chicago Poker Classic. And then also part of that is the Scott Long Poker Classic. You can get all the details at www.maineventcharitygames.com. And we just found out this week that Dennis Phillips,
yes,
from the November 9 last year,
yep,
is scheduled to attend now, as is Bernard Lee, who made a deep run a couple years ago, and Richard Roper, the movie critic up there.
He was on one of the ones earlier. I've been watching it on television because they're broadcasting the shows down here on Bright House.
Right.
And I've been watching it on there, and Richard Roper's on there, and he knows how to play. He's not just there to be a celebrity, so it's pretty cool that he's on the show. And that last part about the Scott Long Poker Classic, that's why we had to have the top down in the car today on the way over, because his head is so big. So please come out and eliminate him as soon as possible. I think we mentioned this before, but we also have our cruise coming up. Have we ever mentioned that on the show?
No. This is the first time we're mentioning cruise.
We're actually going to try something. We're going to do a cruise this year in March. And it's March 25th to the 29th. And TJ Cloutier, the legend, the six-time bracelet winner, is going to be on the cruise with us, playing with us, hanging with us, having dinner with us, chilling, showing us how to play craps. And then, you know, he's going to teach a seminar, too, for an optional seminar for $199. So we're pretty excited about him coming on board.
And he's going to be on our show pretty soon, right?
Yeah.
Next week.
Yeah, I think probably next week we're going to try to talk to him this weekend and have him on the show. So we're going to ask some cool questions and see what's inside his head.
Yep. And then good news on the cruise. Our travel agent called me up last night and said, hey, Royal Caribbean's made a number of extra cabins available for our group. And they're going to be the same low price that we normally have. So if you call... While those cabins are still available, you're going to get upgraded up to four categories.
Wow.
I don't really know what that means, but it sounds impressive.
Hey, anything we can do to make it better for our cruisers.
But, so if you're thinking about calling, now's the time to do it, because you're going to get a better cabin for the same price. Give Mary Culp a call, 727-733-3498. And, of course, we have information at anteupmagazine.com/cruise.
Locally, though, we're going to be doing some stuff, too. I mean, it's not like we're just traveling all over the place, you know. That's we're not right. These jet setters. We got some stuff locally, too. We're pretty excited, and, you know, we have Frank in the studio today, of course, and he's going to be part of our team.
That's right.
On December 15th, we're going to be representing Ante Up in the Cards and Bars team tournament at Tampa Bay Downs, which is kind of cool. It's a team tournament. We got this really unique format, and at the end, you get to play heads up against people for the title, and
winners get Ante Up poker cruises.
And they get two cruises. The whole team will get a cruise, basically. So we're pretty excited about that. And then we're also teaching a course. We're going to try to do it again. We're going to try to teach another course. This one is for people who are afraid to actually be in a poker room, who've never been there, not just afraid, but really intimidated and just want to know what the experience is like, what they need to do to get there. And we're going to teach it at Derby Lane down in St. Petersburg. It's going to be called, we're not sure what we're going to call it. We're just going to have a nice course.
Yeah.
Kind of like Poker 101.
They're calling it Poker 101.
Yeah.
It might even go into Poker 103.
But we're going to be leading that seminar on January 6th at 6 p.m. And it's free. Totally free.
Free.
Come on down. You know, there's going to be goodies. There's going to be food and drink and kind of thing. And have a good time. And just hang out with us. And we'll teach you all the basics. And, of course, you know, if you're listening to us in Michigan or, you know, California or, you know, Japan, get on a plane. It'll be worth it because the seminar's free, so it's like a wash, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, without further ado, I think we need to bring in the doc door. What doesn't he like to be called? Old Frank? Old Doc?
late for dinner.
Late for dinner. Frank, we're so glad to have you back in the show, and thanks for coming on and taking the time off from filling, you know, skinny ladies' lips with fat ladies' butt fat, whatever it is you do. But thanks for taking the time out and joining us today.
Yeah, I think that's how I described it on the billboard.
It's a real wordy billboard.
It's great to be here, guys. I do want to, before we get started, clarify one thing for the listeners. Chris actually is wearing something from the waist down. He's not completely pantsless. It wasn't clear from what he said, but he is wearing something. He's appropriately covered.
Yeah. But it's early in the show, yeah. So anything can happen.
By the end of the show, I don't know what you're going to be asking me, so who knows what's going to happen then. But I saw you eyeing my gams back there, so take it easy, buddy.
And nice gams they are. Most of your listeners know that you guys used to work for the St. Petersburg Times, but I don't think many of them know exactly what you did there and how you guys met. Chris, maybe you could tell us what exactly you did at the St. Pete Times and how you met Scott Long and what was your first impression of him?
Yeah, this is what I'm interested to see what Chris actually did at the time. So,
I mean, I don't know if I should get into all the details, but when I first started there, I worked in the sports department. I started in the regional sports, high school sports, that kind of thing. I edited all of the copy, all the stories that came in, and I designed all the pages that those stories went on. Then eventually, like, I moved over to the main sports rim and call it a rim. In the old days, you actually sat in a rim sort of thing. But now they just call it that because it's an old terminology. But I basically went over to the main sports department section, and then I would edit all the stories in the main section and design it, eventually moving up the ladder until I was, you know, either their main designer on one day or their main editor one day. And I was, like, the last line of defense sometimes for reading stories, making sure nothing libelous or crappy got into the pages. And then eventually I moved on to TBT, which is how the poker show got started, and TBT was a, at the time, I helped launch the weekly magazine. It was called a magazine, even though it's still newspaper printed on and everything, but it was a free magazine in the Tampa Bay area, and I did everything for that. I did whatever it is, whether it was an assigning editor or news stories or, you know, designing the stories or editing the stories or whatever it was. You know, I drove the team bus, too, you know. But that's how I got into TBT. And then when we were there, somebody asked us, you know, hey, do you guys know what a podcast is? And we weren't really sure. And then they said, do you know anything that you'd like to do a podcast on? And at that time, I was really into poker, and Scott and I were in a home game together. But before that, when I first met him, I actually had met Scott while I was in sports, and he was designing the A section, I think it was, because back then he still designed. He didn't move over to business yet. And my first impression of him, I don't know. I mean, he was pretty quiet, actually. It was kind of weird. I thought, you know, we when you're in different sections like that, you don't really have a reason to talk to each other. But sometimes when we're both sitting down there waiting for our last piece of copy and we know we're going to miss deadline or make deadline based on who comes out first, that kind of thing, we would sit next to each other and kind of shoot the, you know, whatever. But really, there wasn't much of a friendship there. We just sort of saw each other once in a while down there, made some comments, kind of joked around a little bit, and then went upstairs. And then only when I found out about poker and talked to Laura, his wife, did I actually get to meet them as a family and play in their poker room and in their poker game. I mean, and that's how we started. But my first impression was just, you know, just some guy laying out the A desk paper who was, you know, pretty much prematurely gray. That's pretty much my first impression. That was what I thought. I was like, wow, this guy's. He's young, but he's got gray hair.
Everybody's gray at 22, right?
How about you, Scott? What was your first impression of Chris, and what did you do at the St. Pete Times?
My first impression, he was a jerk. My current impression, he's a jerk. Nothing's really changed.
His future impression, still a jerk. Hopefully a rich jerk someday, though.
No, I think it was like, I can't really add to much of what Chris said. We just kind of, you know, just started talking and then started talking about poker. And then, boom, next thing you know, we're in a home game and now we're in business. Just happens like that. But as far as what I did there, I came there as an editor in the Nation World Desk. And then I was designing 1A, as Chris said. And then I moved over to business and I was an editor in the business section, and now I'm happily not involved with the Times at all.
Now, you guys have been doing this podcast for about 4 years now. Why do you think it's been so successful?
I think really, you know, Scott and I like to bring this up a lot when we talk to people that we're dealing with, and it's loyalty. And, you know, if someone's loyal to us, we're loyal to them. And I think that we feel like our listeners were loyal to us, especially in the beginning. That's how I feel, at least. And because they were loyal to us, we always felt like we had to give them a show. You know, they're not, a lot of them aren't our friends. They're just our listeners. They don't really know us personally, but a lot of them do. Now you do, and Gambit and those guys, and even the guys up north, you know. And so I feel like there's this sort of, you know, well, now we have more reasons to do it, you know, for the business. But when we were doing it before, just because we were doing it, we loved poker, and we both enjoyed that break away from the monotony at the Times. You know, it gave us that at least that 1 or 2 hours where we knew it was kind of like fun, you know, to go to work. And we just, to keep the streak alive, you know, four and a half years of doing this without missing a week, you know, we just felt like it was the loyalty. You know, if the fans weren't as personable as they were sending us emails or whatever, you know, and talking to us and trying to hook up with us, stuff like that, then it wouldn't have been so much. But that's the dedication, I think. That's how I feel about it. That's why I think it's so successful.
Yeah, I think definitely the fact that we made a commitment not to ever miss a week, I think that shows. I mean, there's so many podcasts out there I've seen that, you know, hey, I just don't feel like doing a show this week, so they don't do one. And that's tough to keep it loyal. But, yeah, I think the other thing, too, I always get a kick out of when I, you know, read message boards or people email us or something and say, oh, my God, if you listen to Chris and Scott's advice, you'd go broke. And it's true. I mean, but we, from the beginning, we've never said that that we're pros. We always pass ourselves off as just what we are, weekend warriors, like joining the and playing the game. And that's the kind of emails we get from a lot of people is, you know, if you listen to other podcasts, you're listening to pros, and they're talking about World Series hands and the World Series of Poker, and when you're talking to us, you're talking about $5 sit-and-go hands, and people can really relate to that. So
yeah, exactly. That's the thing, relating to us and us relating to them.
Has there been a favorite moment that you've had in the podcast over the past 4 years? One moment that really stands out as outstanding?
Well, having you on the show is always top
of
the list.
That, of course.
I really don't know. It's fun because I get to meet people that I normally probably wouldn't be able to meet, whether it's poker pros or just people, you know, just from the show, you know, and stuff. I think I've talked about this before, and it may have been our last show at the Times. I'm not sure what episode it was, but it was funny because you never know. Like, Scott and I were friends, but I never really knew how we felt about the show or whatever. We never really talked about it. We just did the show. But there was one episode where he said that it was that we found our chemistry and it clicked and we knew we were doing something special. And when he said that, I was like, okay, well, then I'm not just doing this for nothing, because he appreciates it too. And that was one of my better favorite moments of the show, just knowing that he enjoys doing as much as I do, and I'm not dragging him into something that he doesn't want to do or whatever. So to know that it was something that was special to him as well, that made it special to me.
Well, that's a great segue into my next question, which is, did you have to work on this banter? You have an easygoing banter between the two of you that's really been the mark of your success. Was that something that you worked on, or did it just come naturally? Was there a moment when you said, you know, hey, this stuff really works, this banter is good, we need to do it more?
I don't know whether we've worked on it. I mean, we don't rehearse anything ever.
Right.
I think, obviously, just, you know, the longer we've been together, the better friends we become, the better we get to know each other and what's going to work. I mean, I know when I come up with an idea for a banter item or something like that, I know how I can say it because I know how Chris is going to react without even telling him. So I guess in that sense, I guess it's just years and experience that have done it. But I think, I guess the other thing, too, is we also, we don't rehearse the show, we plan it out. I mean,
yeah, we talk about it during the week, like what's coming up or what are we going to do for our main topic. And then, and that's the hard, I think that's the hardest part of the show, too, is coming up with a topic every single week. You know, luckily we've started the Ape series, so every couple of weeks we've got something to talk about because the tips are something. But, you know, there really wasn't a day or a moment or, you know, it just grew. It was kind of like, I think at first we were uncomfortable with the fact that we're talking into a mic and we have no idea if anybody's even listening to us. Then once we started to know people were talking about us or bringing up things about what we were saying, then we knew people were listening. And then once we knew they were listening, then it was like, all right, we can relax and be ourselves. Once Scott and I became friendly enough that we could be ourselves with each other, not just, you know, that fake thing on the show, then I think the chemistry happened, because then I could be myself, he could be himself, we can make fun of each other, do our funny voices or whatever, and that's when it happened. But I don't think there was any, like, an epiphany or a, you know, a light came on or anything like that.
Now, you guys made a big step last year. You took a big step. You quit your jobs.
What?
Yeah, the paying jobs.
Oh, my God, I'm always the last to know.
I'm on sick leave, man. I'm hoping I'm getting that paycheck every week.
Oh, man, wife is going to be so mad at me.
And you started up your magazine. Tell us just a little bit about how that came about. Who came up with the idea? Did you actually have a business plan? And what were your biggest hurdles and what were your biggest disagreements about starting up Annie Up Magazine and going out on your own?
I literally woke up, as I often do with ideas, about 3 in the morning one night, and was like, Eureka! A magazine! Because, you know, Chris and I have been, for at least the last couple years at the time, really trying to find a way to generate some revenue off of the PokerCast. And we talked to a couple folks about trying to find a way to do it, and it just never made sense. And we couldn't even find a way to really make revenue for the Times, which is our preference, so... I mean, I guess that was a eureka moment for me is, you know, hey, this is a big state full of poker. No one's covering it. We know how to do a magazine or at least publishing. Why don't we do that? And that will be our revenue driver. And then that'll allow us to continue to do the PokerCast, which is what we really like to do for free. So I think it was the night after a home game at Faso's house. We were out sitting in the street after the game, and it's when I mentioned it to Chris, and he immediately loved the idea, and then literally it was probably a month or 6 weeks after that.
It was pretty remarkable how fast we moved.
We had the company was formed, and then about another month and a half after that, our first issue was on the stand.
So. We were inspired to get out, is basically what we're saying. I can't recall all your questions here, because you asked a lot of them, but what was one of them was, what was one of the biggest disappointment ones, or biggest hurdles? The biggest hurdle, and it's weird, the biggest hurdle I think we had, because from the start, we always knew that Scott would do the business, I would do the editorial, Scott would help with the editorial, and I would help with the business. You know what I mean? But the biggest hurdle was really advertising, and it still is today. It still is our biggest hurdle, because, you know, we have nothing to go by as far as where to go, look, you know. So what we would do is we'd pull up other poker magazines and see what they would charge for ads, and then base our size and all that stuff on there. And then it comes to find out that a lot of the stuff that they publish isn't even true. You know, they're making their own deals on the side you don't know about. So guys are coming up to us saying, you know, how can you charge that when they charge this? And so it's a learning thing. I think the biggest hurdle was just learning that aspect of the business. I mean, how to write, we knew all that. How to design, we know all that. How to hire a printing company, we know how to do all that. Deliver it, talk to people, interview people. That stuff's all second nature. We've been journalists combined for more than 40 years. But the business side of it, where getting people to, you know, you got to make relationships and all that before you can press them to sell, but at what point do you sell? You know, so that I think is the biggest hurdle for, it seems like to us, it's just getting enough people to say, we love your product, we know it's important to be in your product, we'll pay the advertising. I think that's one of the biggest hurdles.
You guys know one of your longtime listeners, Zorag, and he asked a question in the forum. You guys have a forum, right?
I think we have.
If not, we should start one.
.com/something.
I'm just going to read his question word for word because it was great. Do you wake up screaming in the middle of the night when you think about your bottom line?
Not at all. Not at all. I have a terrific wife who helps me if I needed it. I haven't needed the help as far as financially because we've been doing well enough. But no, I never think about it like that. If it doesn't work out someday, we've got the skills and the experience, and education, knowledge that I think we can get a job really anywhere in this business if it didn't work out. So no, I don't feel that way. When I first started it, I got a little nervous, but not anymore.
I was a stress bucket for the first couple months, as anybody is that starts a company, and we, you know, because we did a lot of research going in, but as Chris said, you know, some of the research we did ended up being faulty. So, you know, we had a tough time with the online room. So as soon as we are able to land the PokerStars account, that was what really kind of made me feel a little more comfortable. And that took a couple more months after that. But I don't think I've ever woke up worried or panicked or screaming. We caught a couple breaks along the way that were really great, and we were able to muddle through until it got a little bit better. And now we're to the stage now where Just last night, I cut our last checks to pay off our loans.
Yeah.
And, you know, the next check we cut next month will be actual profit for us. So we've come a long way in 17, 18 months. And
does that mean you're going to start paying your column writers?
That would be the next step. That would be phase 7. We're on phase 2 right now.
Yeah, see us in 2012. We'll let you know by then.
Let's talk about your interviews. You guys are known for having great interviews with pros. I think your first one was with Kenna James. How did that come about?
That's a cool story. I was working for TBT, and I get an email from a guy named Dave, and it says, Dave in Ohio. And I was like, what is this? And he says, hey, love your show. I've been listening to it for a while. You guys are hilarious, blah, blah, blah. Have you ever thought about having Kenna James on the show? And I thought, Scott has no idea who Kenna James is. There's no way he knows. Because the only way anybody knows who Kenna James is in Florida is if they watch the Ultimate Poker Challenge, because, you know, Scott doesn't like to watch poker on TV. So I used to watch it, and he was on there with his cowboy hat, and he won an Ultimate Poker Challenge, and he'd gotten on. He was on TV like 2 or 3 times just on that show alone, and he cracked me up. And there was the way he got his nickname was on one of these episodes. There was a drunk lady in there, and she kept saying, go cowboy, because he had a cowboy hat on. And that's how he got his nickname. And so I knew all that, and I saw him get interviewed by Chad Brown and that kind of thing. So I knew who he was, and I was excited. Oh, my God. Turns out that Big Dave in Ohio, who now we call our chubby reporter, because he moved to Vegas, but he was best friends with Kenna James. And that story is kind of interesting, too, but that's for his podcast, not mine. And that's how we got the interview. A friend of his listened to our show and emailed me. Next thing we know, we're calling him up, and he's on the show, and one of our favorite guests of all time.
I think one of my favorite Kenna James stories was when he played in Monaco, and he was in a hand with someone down to the showdown, and Kenna showed his cards and won, and when the guy mucked, one of his cards flipped up, and it was a 4. And Kenna said, what are you doing calling with a 4 in your hand? This is a million-dollar tournament. Are you nuts? Anyway, you've both previously described your interview with Joe Navarro as one of your absolute favorites. Was there an interview that just fell flat, one that, you know, you thought was going to be pretty good, but when it was over, you were really disappointed?
I'll take this, because I don't want Chris to answer this one. We've had two that have been, well, two guests, a total of 3 interviews that have been really bad, I guess is the best way to say. And I was responsible for all 3. And, you know, because here's the thing. I love having the pros on the show, but I also like to do some other stuff. You know, that's kind of how we got you involved, Frank. I thought it'd be nice to have a doctor's column. And I think a little bit out of the box. So, I contacted a couple people like that. And we had one who was an author. I can't even remember what now. But it was absolutely the driest interview I've conducted in my entire life, going back to, like, in high school when I used to work for the high school paper and talking to folks. He wasn't very media savvy, and, that was bad.
That was tough. That was what I was going to say. I wasn't going to make fun of you or anything. That's what I was going to say. Right.
And then, the PPA's come a long way, their previous executive director before, the great John Pappas, who's running it now, I think it was good for the organization, but again, wasn't very media savvy, and we had him on a couple times. The information he brought was good, but it was tough getting there.
All right, now I got to make fun of you, because I was going to bring up Eric Seidel. That interview Scott had with Eric Seidel was.
Let me go flat. That was poor interview.
No, you're right.
The guest was spot on.
I always think of that author, and that's how flat and boring it was. I can't remember who he was, to be honest with you. I can't remember.
Was there a particular interview that you got that made you feel like you had really made it, one maybe that you had lusted over and tried hard to get, and when you finally got it, you said, hey, we're really in the big time now?
Well, I didn't lust over any of these, but when we had Johnny Chan on, I was shaking. How about that? I called him on the phone, and he thought he was going to have to drive down to the studio. When I told him I was in Florida, he's like, what? And I had him laughing, so that made me feel better, but I was literally... Like, I was so nervous when we were interviewing Johnny Chan. I knew we were making a difference when we got Harmon on, which I think she was like our second pro, actually,
third.
Or third.
After Andy.
Yeah, after Andy Block. So when we had Harmon on the show, I was like, wow, we got the big game on our show now. Things are working out. But when I had Chan on, I had to make that phone call to Chan, I was shaking calling him. Shaking.
That's because he's a bowler, right?
Yeah, because he's a bowler, exactly.
Well, I imagine we'll make fun of each other on this interview at some point. So I'm going to start here. I love how... Chris has been shaking with a couple guests. And I remember back at the time, he was getting the studio, we're getting ready to call, and he's just fidgety all around, and he's looking at me, he's like, aren't you nervous? And I'm like, no, I'm not. And I'm not trying to say I'm better or anything, I just don't get flustered about these interviews like you did, but it's so funny to watch him get all excited about it. And that's what it was. It's excitement. It's not nervousness so much.
And let's clarify that. It wasn't that I was nervous like, oh my God, I'm starstruck. Yeah. It was more like, I want it to be good. Yeah. I want it to be perfect. I want it to be funny, because otherwise it could be the
And all awkward, our interviews you know? Have been perfect. We've never had any problems with those interviews.
As close to that as possible.
Did you have your pants on?
I did have my pants on, but only when I went into the studio. And I vowed to keep my pants on ever since we found that pair of underwear in the studio at that time. I don't know where those came from. They weren't from me, and I didn't want anybody to ever think they were, so that's why I keep my pants on.
Who would you most like to interview that you haven't interviewed yet?
Phil Ivey. I want to talk to Phil Ivey. And I haven't really pursued it enough, but I want to talk to Phil Ivey. I mean, that's it.
I think everybody wants to talk to him. He doesn't do any interviews, really, so,
yeah.
You know. That would be the tough one to get.
I mean, now he's savvy now. He's on that poker road and all that stuff. So, I mean, he's loosening up to it. Now with this new recent Final Table stuff, he's been doing more and more interviews. So now I think it's ripe for the picking. If I really want to try to find him and get him, I think I could. That's what I want to talk to. But I want to save it for something that we absolutely, you know, special. You know, not just another show. You know what I mean? But that's the guy. He's the one guy that we can't talk to. I've talked to Doyle. Talked to TJ. I've talked to Johnny Chan. We talked to Negron. You know, we've had Raymer on twice. We've had the big, big names. But Ivy's the one, it's always eluded us.
Are there any pros that you've asked for interviews that have just flat turned you down?
No. But there was a guy, and I'm going to bring it up because we wrote about this in the magazine, actually. Everybody who knows Scotty Wynn, and he says, you know, you call, it's going to be all over, baby. You know, when he says that to the guy? Well, the guy he said it to is from Florida. And I ran into him at the World Series. And I was like, hey, man, you know, I'd love to do like a where are they now thing, because you still live in Florida, you still play in our card rooms, you know? And he's like, no, I'm not interested. And I'm like, well, you're going to be on the cover of the magazine, isn't that cool? And or at least be in the magazine. No, I like my anonymity. I was like, well, I knew who you were. And he's like, no, but most people don't know who I am, blah, blah, blah. So that was really the only guy who ever said no to us. Everyone else, they're always so gracious, they want to be on. They give you their phone numbers, blah, 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 but Scott doesn't really pursue interviews like that often. He's not really into the covering of it more than, you know, just experiencing it. But when I'm out there, I'm always just asking for numbers and, hey, you have any Florida connections, you know, whatever it is. So, no one's ever really turned us down.
Imagine for a minute, guys, that you're going to get to sit down at a poker table with other pros. Make it a low-stakes game so you're not at risk. Name four pros each that you'd like to sit down at a poker table with.
I'll let Scott go first.
Wow, four.
Your dream table.
You know, this is going to disappoint people. I don't know if I really have a dream table. I mean, again, I don't get starstruck with these folks. I mean, if I wanted to play with them, I would hope that someday I could play in the big game and actually have the money on them. And that would be an experience to me. I mean, just sitting around the home game having the... I am really excited that TJ's coming on the cruise. I've always really admired him and liked him. So I guess we'll kind of cross that off our list. I imagine we'll play with him on the cruise. And, of course, people know on the show like Dewey, Tomko. But, you know, we're not talking a riveting game here. Other two? Wow, I don't know.
Chris?
Well, I'm going to wait till you finish the answer.
No, I mean, I don't know. I guess it's not something I sit around and think about. Well, I wish I could sit around and play with this. So it's not me.
Is it four people you said?
Name some pros you'd like to see.
Well, it would be Ivy, Helmuth, Tony G, and let me see. Ivy, Tony G, Helmuth, and Negreanu.
That'd be a fun table.
Interesting choice.
Yeah, well, I know because of the personalities at that table, too, who would say what to what. And I mean, I'm not necessarily sure Tony G would do what he had done in the past, but I like Tony G, especially after I've met him now. And if he ever got into one of those tirades and did it at me, that would be awesome. That would be absolutely awesome, watching him yell at me and getting on my bike and everything. That'd be great.
All right, we play about a dozen or more different games at our home game. And I know which games you guys like the best. Tell me the game you like the least.
Omaha 8, it's the devil's game. He invented it. He spreads his evil everywhere throughout it, and I hate it when Gambit calls me it 45 times a game.
2-7, triple draw, low ball.
Then Badoogie, another game invented by freaking Gambit and the Devil. Both Gambit and the Devil are working together to piss me off, is what it is, because I can't stand Omaha 8, and I can't stand Badoogie, and then I can't stand Deuce of 7, and then I can't stand Raz, and you call that all time, Frank. So those, that's the order of the games right there. Stop calling those games, man. Just stop it. It's not that I lose a lot of money on them, it's just I hate them.
All right, I'll be calling all of those games every home game.
Yeah, I'm sure you will be.
Get off the fence, guys. Which one of you two is going to be the first one to cash in a WSOP event?
I don't think either of us are ever going to enter one, so I don't think we can actually...
That could be a contest for the ages.
That one will last forever.
Yeah, you know, if it's a no-limit hold'em, it'll be Chris. If it's something else, I mean, I probably have a fighting chance. But yeah, I don't...
I don't think we're ever going to...
Not really. Well, again, we did it once, and I don't really have a big desire to plunk down that kind of money again until I can really, really afford it. So.
Yeah. I mean, if I just happen to, like, win a seat, which I'm actually playing for a seat on Saturday, but if I happen to win a seat, you know, I don't say I'm going to cash, but that's really the only way I'm going to go play again, probably, is if I win a seat. And I'm going to have to get invited to win these seats because I'm not going to fork over the money that it takes to play to win the seat anyway. So I don't think that is ever going to happen. I don't think we have to worry about that.
Scott, I'm gonna pick on you for a minute.
Oh, good.
Now, I've met your lovely wife, Laura, several times. And it seems to me that you have an amazingly close relationship. You travel together. You attend sporting events together. You even like the same kind of foods. You support each other's interests. She supports your interest in poker. She likes to go to concerts and hear live music. You support her in that. Tell our listeners a little bit more about Laura. How did you meet? And how did you develop such a great relationship?
All right. Well, how we met is easy. I was working at a newspaper in Ohio. She interviewed to work at a newspaper, that same newspaper in Ohio. And she got the job, and we became friends, and then we started dating. And then a couple months after that, I decided that Ohio was too damn cold, so we picked up and moved to Florida and got married a couple years later than that. Oh, in a relationship. Our relationship is very different, I think, than a lot of married couples, in that we're very independent folks that live together and love each other, I guess, in a way. But I think we let each other have the freedom. I mean, I know she likes her music, so she travels by herself to see stuff like that. And I know that I go when I can and when I want to, but I also know that if I insisted on going all the time, she'd be miserable, I'd be miserable. And same with poker. So we kind of like give each other our space to do our own things, and then we find enough that we like to do together.
Who runs your household?
Our cat.
Good answer.
Literally, our cat does.
Now, my wife loves the idea of the poker wife tax. Explain that for our listeners and tell us who came up with that idea, you or Laura.
No, that was definitely my idea. You know, again, because I, you know, the biggest tough thing in a marriage is finding time to do your own thing. And we've done that pretty well. But, you know, when I got into poker, I started doing a lot more of that than I normally do. So I was trying to find a way to make it palatable for her. And then the funny thing is that once we started the company, then she's like, yeah, you don't have to pay it anymore.
Ha! Oh, you're off the hook now.
Oh, yeah, I've been off the hook for a while.
Once again, so my wife will hear it. Was she supportive of your idea to start a magazine?
Absolutely. Absolutely. She had a lot of questions, a lot of really good questions, a lot of questions that really helped us improve the idea. But yeah, I mean, she always wanted me to do what I wanted to do. So
now, we all know that you like beer.
I've been known to put one back.
Our good friend and longtime listener, Raskony, wants to know about your beer preferences. Let's say out of thousands of bottles of beer, you can only pick three different ones. What's your top three choices?
I can only pick three. All right, I am going to pick Old Style from Chicago, which is probably the best budget beer made anywhere. That would be my budget beer. I would pick Mackeson, which is a very good triple chocolate stout from Great Britain. That's my high-end beer that I like to drink. And then then I'll pick Coors Light. That's my daily beer. That's a beer I drink day in and day out. How's that?
That's good. Say no beer is available. What's your next alcoholic beverage of choice?
Johnny Black. Neat.
All right. One more question on the beer theme. I've stepped into your house during the holidays, and there's a very unusual decoration. Would you tell our listeners in detail how that came about and describe it for them?
I'm guessing you're talking about the beer tree, the beer Christmas tree, which we bought last night and up, and it's got one ornament on there. We very quickly, for the last 16 years, I've had a little gathering with my college friends. We've stayed close, and part of the event is to drink the absolute biggest value brand beers that we can find. I will not say bad, because some of them are very good. And it's kind of a quest, so people will be flying in this weekend, and then we bring in some real good beer, and when we're done, we put the empties on the tree.
All right, I've got another question for you.
Who's that on the phone?
Please silence your phone, Scott. On your casino trips with Mike Faso, they've become almost legendary.
Yes.
Yet you and Mike seem to be opposites, personality-wise. How do you and Mike get along when you travel, and why do you think that matchup works?
Opposites. I don't know if necessarily think we're opposites. I think the funny thing about Mike,
he has class and education.
All right. Very good. the funny thing about Mike and I, we sat right next to each other at the Times for probably 4 years and never said a word to each other. And now we're really good friends. I don't know how that happened. But I think we get along because, again, kind of like Laura, we're different enough that we know what the differences are, but we share something in common, and we have a good time, and we we realize that we're going to laugh at each other a lot because the things I do and the things he does, and we're able to tease each other about it. So we've been good travel partners because we both like to play, and we both like to play the same kind of stuff, and we're able to come up with the same kind of similar stuff. And then we're going to Biloxi next month.
Oh, that's great.
First trip we've had together in a long time. So looking forward to that.
One more. If you had the power to change one thing about Chris Cosenza, what would it be?
I would burn all of his shorts and make sure that he has nothing but long pants to wear. And I don't care if it gets 106 out. That's going to be his penance for wearing shorts.
Chris, you're up. Now, Most of the Annie Up Nation knows very little about your wife, Jean. Now, I've met Jean on the cruise, and she's an absolutely lovely lady. She's smart, she's attractive, she's friendly. You, on the other hand, on rare occasions, exhibit just a tiny bit of temper. You're a little bit tight-fisted with money, and you're not really a snappy dresser. As far as ego goes, well, let's hear what Jean has to say about your ego. Can you play that clip for me?
This is Jean Cosenza, and you're listening to Annie Up, and you are feeding Christopher Cosenza's ego.
Clearly, Jean is very devoted to you and one of your biggest supporters. Tell us how the two of you met and how you were able to get such a lovely woman to pay any attention to you at all.
Well, I had to have a job in college, and when I was in high school, I had a job at a local country club. I was a busboy, you know, I was only 16 or whatever. And I ran into a woman that I used to work with at the country club a few years later when I was in college. I needed a job. And she said, well, why don't you come on down to the country club? I'm sure you can get a job there again. And I said, okay. So she said, make sure you talk to this woman named Dawn. And I said, all right. So I show up the next day, I walk into the country club, and I go around the corner, and there's nobody there. It's like an empty hallway. And out comes this woman from the back door of the kitchen, and she starts walking away from me, and I kind of clear my throat, and she turns around, and she goes, oh, can I help you? And I said, yeah, I'm here to see Dawn for a job. And she says to me, well, Dawn got let go last night. You'll see me now. And it was Jeannie. And from the minute I started talking to her, I just it was love at first sight, and she was just a fantastic woman. How I got her to marry me and everything is still a mystery today. I really don't know. Yeah, I think that I had enough honor that she had to marry me. You know, I don't know. But, you know, to be truthful, you know, I just think that we just click. You know, I think that she understands me. I understand her. We make each other laugh. And, you know, it was just one thing after another.
Now, you have an extended family. You have some stepkids and some step-grandkids. Tell us a little bit about them.
Well, they're great. You know, That's one thing about, I mean, I'm sure everyone knows that my wife is older than I am, so she had kids early in her life, and a couple of them are near my age, so we're actually like best friends. We're friendly with each other. They don't call me dad or anything. We're just buddies. The younger ones, they call me dad, but they're not younger now. You know what I mean? Now they're old enough to be on their own and out of the house, so it's interesting. The grandkids are just fantastic. It's different because, you know, the kids themselves, you know, they look at me as, you know, the guy who married mom, and now we love him, so now we, you know, we're together. But the little ones just know me as, you know, their grandfather, and it's priceless, and I love them to death, and I'm having another one come in January, so it's just incredible.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks.
Where did you grow up, and what's your educational background, and how did you get to Florida? What made you move to Florida?
The cold. I grew up in Wallingford, Connecticut, and I lived there my whole life, essentially. When I moved in with Jean, she lived in the next town over called Meriden, and that was a city, actually, and we lived there for a few years before we moved to Florida. I went to all the schools in the Wallingford district, and I went to Lyman Hall High School in Wallingford. But when I went to college, I went to Southern Connecticut, home of the Fighting Owls. and it's funny, they actually won like the national championship in soccer like 3 out of the 4 years I was there or something. They were incredible. So they were on the map for that, but really just that. It's part of the Connecticut State universities like UConn, and all those schools are all part of the same kind of thing. We moved here because I was working for a newspaper called the Middletown Press. I was their sports editor, and it got bought by the company that used to own, or that owned the company I used to work for. I used to work for the New Haven Register, and the Journal Register Company bought out our newspaper while I was working there, and they just made my life miserable. They were just horrible bottom line accountants that they just made my life miserable. And my wife always wanted to live in Florida. My brother already lived here. My parents wanted to live here, but they wouldn't leave me in Connecticut. They wanted to be with me too. So they made the choice to stay there while I was there. But everyone wanted to live in Florida. I hated my job, and I started to fall in love with Florida on a couple of vacation trips down here. And so I put out some resumes, and next thing I know, I'm interviewing for a job at the Times and came here in 95.
Now, like me, Chris, you're a Paisan.
That is correct.
Are you a pasta and gravy kind of guy, or are you more meat and potatoes like Scott?
No. I'm all about the pasta, and it'll probably be what kills me someday. It's funny, though, because I can't find a sauce down here that's good, you know. And even my mom's sauce, you know, it's not the same as it was when I was a kid. You know, she used to make it with the contadina paste and all that, and really make it thick, and now it's more of a, you know, it's funny because they call sauce marinara over here, but marinara is not really sauce. Marinara is actually a seafood sauce. If you take it literally, it means sauce from the sea. But I'm definitely a pasta guy. I mean, that's, you know, I make pasta fazool myself. You know, that's my father's recipe. And, I'm definitely a pasta guy.
Now, we know Scott likes his beer, but you've told the Antiup Nation many times that you're a teetotaler. Do you feel comfortable telling us how you came to that decision?
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to say anybody in particular, but there were people in my family, in the history of my family, that were alcoholics. And we're talking about, you know, uncles, that kind of thing, or aunts, or whatever. And I saw what people went through living in those households and heard about the stories. And I just did not want to, not that I have an addictive personality, but it's a trait in my family. And I never interested me. And, you know, you talked about me being a tight, you know, kind of with the money kind of thing. You know, you go out drinking with your friends. I mean, you drop $100, you know, and for what? You know, and I used to love making people laugh when we go out together, and when they're drunk, they're really easy to make laugh. So if I stayed sober, it was a lot easier to make them laugh, and it was a lot lighter on the wallet too. I'd rather get a 75-cent soda and chill with my buddies than pay, you know, $6 for a shot or something. You know, so it was a combination of things, but I never really had any interest in it. Never tasted good either, really.
Let's pretend, Chris, that for a week you can't do anything related to poker. No books, no TV, no TiVo, no internet. What do you do for recreation and pleasure?
Oh, I play the piano. I have a baby grand at the house, and I'll play the piano. You know, as far as by myself, as far as with the family or whatever, you know, we'll watch football, you know, or we'll watch a movie together or whatever, you know. But without poker at all, and if I'm by myself, it's piano. I play the piano.
That's surprising. Something I didn't know about you.
And it's classical, too. I play a lot of classical piano. I think that's the one thing Fasso and I have in common, besides being hot-headed, you know, Italians.
That's very good. We know you're a poker player, but are you a gambler? Do you bet money on anything other than poker, like UConn? Are you planning on making any bets this season?
You know the answer to that because you emailed me and said, hey, let's put a 10 spot on Duke versus UConn. And I said, only if you give me 2-1 odds. And even then, I wasn't going to do it. No, I don't like to gamble. You know, people like to say poker is gambling, but, you know, only in certain situations, you know, but overall, it's not gambling, it's skill. So, no, I'm not a gambler at all. I don't like to put money down on anything. Sometimes Scott and I do last longer bets, but I always win those. So I don't consider those last longer bets. I don't consider them gambling, I mean. So, no, I don't do that.
If you had the power to change one thing about Scott Long, what would it be?
I guess I would ask him to wear shorts.
I met Blasman and his family on the cruise. He's a longtime listener and a nice guy, and he's worried that you're going to sell Annie up to Poker News. Can either of you guys tell me about your business relationship with Tony G and reassure Blas?
We're not going to sell it to Poker News. I mean, what we have with Poker News is a really good strategic partnership, which I guess is the buzzword for it. But we just have similar goals and different ways of getting there, so joining together we can do that. So I can't imagine a scenario where they'd want to buy us, but maybe down the road, maybe. But I got to tell you, I love what we're doing right now, so I'm not anticipating that happening.
And the other thing, too, is I'm not sure what the question means. Are you saying that he's going to buy our magazine or the show? Because no one will ever buy our show. You can't buy our show. You know what I mean? I mean, you can sponsor it if you want, but it's our show. You know, the magazine's a product that someone might be interested in owning someday. Who knows? Something like that would happen. But we're real happy where we're going, what we're doing, where we're going, and what we envision where we're going to be someday. And I don't see us selling it to anyone like that. But the show definitely is not going to go to anybody but us. It's either going to end or we're going to own it.
You know, you guys have come up with some really great ideas so far. You've got a monthly online tournament called Apes, which is attracting international attention, even south of the border. And I think the Walmart plastic banana is now the second most coveted trophy in all of poker. You've got a valuable sponsorship with Poker Stars. You've got the only poker magazine with a regular health column. An excellent column, I might add. You got a blog, a forum, a website, a Facebook page. You've got a clothing line, an online store. You've started a live poker tournament series called the Annie Up Poker Tour. You've had good success with your first cruise, and you got another one coming up. What's your next move? I know you guys are kicking around some ideas for expansion. Can you give us a sneak preview of what the future has in store for Annie Up?
Well, first, I got to take this Fiverr out and pay you for saying that. But yeah, expansion is next on the horizon for Ante Up. You know, I didn't know that we were going to announce this. Scott had told people. I didn't know he was going to tell people. So I guess it's okay to talk about it now. But we are moving north. By north, I mean we're going to
Valdosta.
Yeah, Georgia. But no, really, I think that we're going to make the natural progression and start to spread to Mississippi, New Orleans, Georgia, Alabama, North Carolina, South Carolina, that kind of thing. And then from there, just continue. And it's a natural progression. It's an easy progression to do that right now. But ultimately, you know, I think the goal is just everywhere. We came up with this thing where instead of it being Annie Up Florida's Poker Magazine, we're now going to be called Annie Up Your Poker Magazine. Because that's exactly what it is. When you pick it up, you will be able to find something that interests you in that magazine about your area, about your, you know, your friends or your home game or your casinos. And that's why it's going to be called that. It's going to be Your Poker Magazine, and wherever we go, it will be Their Poker Magazine. It doesn't have to be just Florida. It doesn't have to just be, you know, California or whatever, Australia. I mean, it's Your Poker Magazine where we go.
Is there anything you guys would like to say before we wrap up to the listeners, something I've not covered or just something you want to say?
Thank you.
Dead silence.
No, I'm serious. Thank you. Well, I mean, really, without them, we wouldn't have a magazine, believe it or not, because without them, there wouldn't be a need for the show. Or when we first did the show, if they weren't listening, we wouldn't have kept doing it, and we wouldn't have had the idea to do a magazine about poker. And what we're doing today is because of Blasman and Zorag and, you know, Gambit and those guys. Everyone who listens to the show, Rasconi and Rant, you know, those are the people that talk to us, keep us going, need us, make us know that the magazine and the show are important to them, so it's important to us, and without them, we wouldn't have done it.
Ditto.
I really appreciate you guys putting yourself at risk on the other side of the microphone. I've learned a lot, and I hope I've covered most of the questions that the listeners might have had about you guys and about the Anyup Empire. I think I speak for a lot of poker players when I say that, intentional or not, you two have made a tremendous contribution to the Florida poker scene. You've supported Florida poker players, Florida card rooms, and bar leagues. You've distributed your magazine free to dozens of locations throughout the state. You've lobbied for more liberal poker laws. You've acted as a resource for players wanting to learn different games. You've been a tremendous positive force for poker in Florida. And on behalf of Florida poker players and poker players in your new area of influence, I want to thank you guys a lot for what you've done.
Well, thanks, Frank. Really appreciate it. We knew that you wanted to do this show, and we couldn't think of anyone better to do it. And we really appreciate you taking the time to do this. And like I said, I know there's a lot of skinny women out there who are really upset that you took time coming here. And so, you know, they're wishing that their lips were bigger and fuller right now. And and I really appreciate you coming down and helping us out today. And thanks for all the help and the accolades.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And I got a full office this afternoon, so I'll be leaving in just a moment.
Don't you ever get tired? Tired of constantly getting the red carpet treatment?
Good evening.
Tired of having all your worries taken care of and knowing that there's a place reserved for you?
Right this way, sir.
Of course you don't. That's why you join PokerStars. After all, our VIP club awards over $3.6 million worth of major on- and offline tournament entries every month. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out more about why other reward schemes just don't open as many doors. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Hey, this is AJ Benzing.
This is Justin Bonomo.
This is Downtown Chad Brown.
Hi, this is Clooney Gowan.
This is Daniel Negreanu.
Hey, this is David Singer.
This is Linda Johnson.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer.
Hi, this is Hoyt Corkins.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet.
Hi, this is John D'Agostino.
This is Joe Seabach.
This is Jennifer Harmon.
Yeah, this is Johnny Chan.
This is Cowboy Kenna James.
Hi, this is Mark Safe.
This is Paul Wasika.
Hi, this is Miami Johnson.
This is Noah Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
Chris, I'm always happy when Lee All My Childs makes it on the show.
Oh, my child.
He's been here a lot lately, and we appreciate it. Again, Lee is a instructor, founder of AcumenPoker.net, a lock poker pro, and a quality player in his own right. Lee, how is it hanging today?
Things are good, man. Things are good.
Are we really going to take Annie Up PokerCast into that? How's it hanging?
I didn't ask him what was hanging. I just asked him, whatever around his house that's hanging, how is it hanging?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You know, we first started the show years ago, and it was like, you know, Scott would say SOL, and we were like, ooh, if people know what that means, we're really pushing the envelope. Now Scott's asking Lee how it's hanging. This is unbelievable. We've entered a new...
Hey, it takes 30 minds to edit a dirty podcast.
New era here, buddy. Yeah. All right, what's the hand, man? We got a good hand this week? I know it's got to be No Limit Hold'em.
Boy, you keep hammering him on that. Maybe he's read that Pot Limit Omaha book already.
I didn't get to it this week, but maybe next week.
All right.
Okay. This one comes from Gregory Lynn from Kingston, Mass. And he is playing online at our favorite poker room, PokerStars.com. He is playing in a $1, $2 cash game, 6 max seat table. This might be one of the higher limit online games that we've analyzed, Chris, I think.
Could be.
The 1-2 plays higher online than it does in real life, doesn't it, Lee?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's. I think we've talked about this before. People that are consistently beating a 1-2 game online will pretty much crush the 2-5 and probably 5-10 games live. It's just the games have gotten much tougher online these days with all the, you know, regulations and all that stuff and making it harder to get money on and off. So you got a lot of top players that are, you know, 8+ tabling 1-2 games and doing very well and playing just premium cards and situations only. So those games are actually pretty tough.
All right, our hero has $239. A quick look around the table. He is second in chips at the table. Chip leader has 354. Everybody else has about 200 and change. All right, under the gun folds. Next player calls $2. We get a couple folds. We are in the small blind with 10 of diamonds, 10 of clubs. What do we do? And I'm not going to ask twice.
Say it again now. We had two folds. What happened?
We had a under the gun folded.
Okay.
Under the gun plus one calls. The next two players fold.
All right, so it's
we were in the small blind.
Okay.
10 of diamonds, 10 of clubs. And I guess I will have to ask again now.
I'm sorry. I did that just to make you do that. So I don't like having 10-10 and having multiple opponents. This is just me. Now, I speak as if I know what I'm talking about and not a man who's lost $800 in 2 weeks. But I just don't want to be with the multiple pot here unless I happen to be lucky and flop a set. But I can't see the future, so I'd like to narrow the field and raise. Now, I know Dan DeGrano says it's just 10s. And if we're in a big tournament, maybe you do just call here. But I'd like to – am I on the button maybe?
You're in the small blind.
Oh, the small blind. Yeah, I definitely want to force everybody out because I'm not going to have position on this hand. So I'd raise it like 5x, make it $10 to go.
Yeah, I'd raise 8 to 10. Usually I just account for the limpers. And, you know, if my standard raise is 3x, then I'll add, you know, the $2 and make it 8. Since I'm out of position, 9 or 10 bucks might even be better. But I'm, you know, I'm raising, I likely have the best hand, so I'm raising for value and to limit. You know, I'd rather play this heads up. And, you know, I'm fine if nobody calls. But like Chris said, you know, being out of position, it's just going to be tough. So if you raise, you take control of the pot. If somebody, you know, if somebody just calls you and you don't hit your set, you can win it a large percentage of the time with just a continuation bet on the flop. So, you know, raising to $8 or $10 is great here.
All right. I made a great move, Scott. Did you hear that?
Excellent. Guess who else made a great move?
Oh, is it our hero?
Greg from Kingston, Mass.
Awesome.
He raises $8 to 10. But get this, the big blind calls, and so does the limper. We did not succeed in thinning the field, and we go to the flop three-handed, and we see a flop of king of spades, six of hearts, eight of diamonds. Of course, we're first to act.
I don't know, Lee. I think you're going to make fun of whatever I say here, so I think I might just defer to you. I would always bet here. I've seen people watch me play and bet in this situation, and they say, why'd you bet there? You know, he's probably got a king, and you might be able to see a turn for free, so... maybe I check and see what happens. It just seems fishy to me if I raise like that to check. But and I know I'm out of position now, so I'm screwed with three guys in the hand, me and two other guys. So I'm going to bet probably half the pot here and watch you all make fun of me.
That's just awful. That's just no. Just because I'm gonna bet $20. I'm going to bet two-thirds of the pot right here. I've taking control pre-flop. I'm going to continue with my continuation bet. These guys, we got one guy who just limped. Now, we do have the guy who cold called our raise. You know, could have a decent hand there. You know, could have like a mid pair or suited connector. It's, you know, it's only $10. And so it's correct for him to be calling with any kind of pairs or suited connectors. And I would expect the premium pairs to have re-raised. But, you know, he could easily have, like, a king-queen, even ace-king. Some people just, you know, play it a little slower, especially, I mean, I might flat with ace-king in a cash game here to take a flop-in position against this razor. So, you know, the ranges are pretty wide there, but I would never check this flop against just two opponents. I'm gonna try to just take it down right now with a bet of $20.
Yeah. What the hell does that mean?
He just made fun of you.
No, sir. I said I'd bet half the pot, which is 15.
That's not what I remember.
Half the pot is $15. No,
he said 15.
So he said 20. So $5 is making fun of me.
Yeah. All right, a little revisionist history going.
15 is a fine bet, Chris.
Thanks, bud. I said half the pot. That's over $15.
That's about that. All right. Yeah, so our hero concurs, bets $18. The big blind, who we're a little bit worried about, Flats again. Look at that. I could have said calls, but I'm going to be hip today. Calls the $18. The initial Lipper gets out of the way, so we are heads up now and see a turn card of 10 of spades. So that puts the board at king of spades, six of hearts, eight of diamonds, 10 of spades. We've hit our set.
That's awesome. I mean, unless the guy's got pocket kings, I mean, you know, or
something. Wow, that was like Spicoli there.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
Dude, did you hear that? That was
hand.
That was my skull. All right, so anyway, God, I would love to check here, I think. I think I would love to just trap this guy who might have ace-king, you know, and like I'm afraid to see what he's got and want to check and control the pot. I would love to just check and trap this guy.
That's now I'm going to make money. Check raising or checking?
Oh, checking and then probably raising.
No. Now I'm going to make fun of you.
Okay. Oh, yes.
No, I want to continue here. I like, you know, it's most, if he's got a king, he's probably not going anywhere. So I want to build this pot. You know, another Broadway card got there. I'm not, you know, you're like hoping he has king 10, you know, that he's got the other 10 with his king, you know, or, you know, the miracle having a lower set or something. 7-9 is obviously unlikely. It could be that he had a suited 7-9. But I want to build value here. A turned set is one of the most disguised hands. And I think if he's got anything at all, I think he can, you know, if he had anything on the flop, then he probably isn't worried so much about that 10. So I like betting here against most opponents, and I'd bet like $40.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. I don't disagree or agree, and I guess even if I said raising later after what I'm trying to make a point here is, let's say you were playing this hand and you were the guy who's our opponent now, who we're heads up with. And would you have played this hand if you had 7-9 of diamonds? Would you have played it this way? Would you have called in position? Or would you have folded in position? Is it possible for you, Lee Childs, the great acumen poker guy, to have called with 7-9 of diamonds in this spot at all, or 7-9 of hearts, or whatever it is?
Sure.
So it is possible that you could be playing this hand like 7-9 and would have played it this way up to this point?
Yep.
All right, so then you're screwed then, because you're losing to a straight. If you bet out, and if he gets it all in, you're going to call.
Yeah, but that's right? That's the only hand you're losing to other than the two kings. So, yeah, that's just...
Okay.
Yeah, that...
I was just curious if you would play 7-9 that way.
Yeah, and I think... I don't like to check because I don't want him to check behind. I don't know what other draw he could have. It doesn't seem like there's any other draw. There was no... You know, unless he picked up some kind of random flush draw on the turn with the spade. But, you know, I think that he's – it depends on how much you know about the opponent as well. But most of the time, I'm just going to go ahead and keep betting here. It's such a disguised hand, and just hope that he has, like, king, queen, ace, king, king, 10, you know, and obviously beautiful if he has a set or any other two pair he might not. I don't know. He could have like an 8-10, but it's doubtful, I think. Depends on how solid this guy is.
Okay.
All right. Well, our hero is of the Chris Cosenza line of thinking and checks.
That's not good because he sent it to the end of the week.
And our opponent bets $32.
Oh, well, that's good. Unless he's got the straight. Hey, ask the dog what he thinks.
I think the dog is happy.
I think the dog has fleas, too. I could have sworn I heard the dog, like, scratching himself earlier. I don't know.
No way, man.
All right, so our villain bets $30. It's back to us. What do we do now?
Well, that's a good question now, because what are we putting him on? You know, do you raise? Now you're going to raise, right? Because, or are you going to call and try to, because you got your bet out of him. Are you going to call and just see the river for that price, or what?
I think I'm gonna raise now. He's representing that he's got some kind of hand now. And what would be weird is to just call and then to lead the river. So you want to make him pay if he's got two pair or set, or if he's, you know, he could have floated us with you know, something kind of random, like a ace-jack, ace-queen of spades. You know, there's things that he could have floated with, or he could have just floated with just complete air. He's trying to take it away now with a half pot size bet.
But isn't that why a check is good on 4th Street then? If he is floating, you check and let him try to steal it and then re-raise him out of it, or no?
Yeah, that's fine. I just like when I've improved my hand and it's very disguised.
Yeah.
Since he called me on the flop, you know, in most cash games, people. In a 1-2 cash game, people aren't going to do a lot of random floating, you know, and I'm just giving that as an example of what could be going on, and that's fine if you bet and it goes away. But, you know, because it's if these guys are regulars and they're 8-tabling, 10-tabling, whatever, even just a couple tables, they're not worried about looking for situations for, like, random floats and try to steal pots. I mean, that's more of a tournament kind of play. These guys are looking for more, you know, solid situations. So not to say that stuff doesn't go on, but it's just less frequent. You know, when you get people that are just playing more recreationally and they're only playing one table, then, you know, they may be more likely to do something a little tricky because they're looking to get that excitement out of it too. So with his bet here, I feel like he's got a hand. If he's got the 7-9, then that just really sucks. But I think I'd raise. Yeah, I'm not going away now. I mean, yeah, you got plenty of outs there. So,
well, what do you raise to when he bets 32? What do you raise to, like 100?
Yeah, I guess, but that's gonna be half your stack, which is fine because it's 1-2, so it's that's still 50 big blinds behind. It's not like it's not like a tournament where once you've committed that much of your stack, you might as well get it all in. So, yeah, I'd make it, you know, anywhere from 90 to 100, I think.
All right, our hero does raise $78 to make it 110 straight. Our opponent re-raises all in up to 182.95.
Hopefully it's a miracle set over set and we're ahead, not behind. But
yeah, you got to call.
Yeah, you got to call.
Yeah, I mean, it's 7-9 is the only thing you're worried about. It could be a very sneakily played Kings. But yeah, it's you're hoping like an aggressive ace king or king 10 or the eights or sixes is what you're hoping now, or just, you know, it could because they can't think he's on a move. He's only raising you like $73 more, so he's got some kind of hand for sure.
Yeah, man, you got to call.
All right, well, our hero does call. River comes to 5 of clubs. The final board is king of spades. 6 of hearts, 8 of diamonds, 10 of spades, 5 of clubs. Our opponent shows 6 of clubs, 6 of diamonds.
Wow.
Nice.
Set over set.
Yeah, and we didn't tell anybody, but the name of the person was AUN2112. And lost set over set. It was me. I was in the hand, and of course I lost.
Oh, you know, and this is a rare occurrence. Set over set happening online. I mean, this is.
It just doesn't happen.
I'm a little dumbfounded here that. We got such a rare gem of a hand here where such a situation happened.
Oh, my God.
I'm certainly happy for our hero there. That's a $430 pot there that was a little scary at the end.
So he clearly won't get anything from us today, right? Because $420 pot, I mean, you know, show me some love. Give me the package or something. I don't know.
Easy come, easy go, and we just know what he won in this hand. They very likely could have donked off 1,000 right after this.
That's true. That's
true. To a set over set. I mean, can you imagine that set over set happening 2 hands in a row online? I mean, that
no
would
way.
Really pop the mind.
No way.
So I think we're going to give him a $10 online staking package from getastake.com, Chris, if that's all right with you.
Okay, I'll approve it. Send me the paperwork. I'll sign off on it. Hey, Lee, thanks for making fun of me a little bit today.
All right, you got it, man. It's
I
easy
appreciate
to do.
It. Man, a month straight of dealing with Lee Childs, it's pretty cool.
Hey, Lee, thank you for making fun of Chris today.
Hey, you're welcome, buddy.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@anyupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.